those crazy Christians. I was gonna sleep in today, but the church bells woke me up, and they're a half a mile away. Those crazy Christians, dressed up driving down my street, get their weekly dose of guilt before they head to Applebee's. They pray before they eat, and they pray before they snore. They pray before a football game, and every time they score. Every untimely passing, every dear departed soul is just another good excuse to bake a casserole. Those crazy Christians, go and jump on some airplane, fly to Africa or Haiti, risk their lives in Jesus' name. No, they ain't the late night party kind. They curse the devil's whiskey while they drink the Savior's wine. A famous TV preacher has a big affair, and then one tearful confession, and he's born again, again. Someone yells hallelujah, and they shout and clap and sing. It's like they can't wait to forgive someone for just about anything.
Yeah, if we could get them just as excited or even half as excited over the white people as they do over the Untermenschen and the Negroes in the Caribbean and Africa and all that kind of stuff, sending millions and millions and millions of dollars from the local churches bleeding the country and paying no taxes. If we could just get them doing a little bit for the white man, we'd be in a lot better shape. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana. On a snowy day, it's not snowing right now, but it snowed about 4 or 5 inches during the night. It's a Vinta Vantaland, according to, what was his name? Yugo Vintahalta. Yeah. So anyhow, it is the, what is it, the 15th. Oh, this is the day of the devil. You're supposed to get your donations in by the 15th. We'd appreciate that. A lot of you, most of you, got them in already, but be nice if you get them in by the 15th, you know. And the webmaster says that there's been a lot of new stuff put up on the web, a lot of stuff put back up there, and we've cut some things out, and we've had some people even ask us about it, but there's a reason why we've cut them out, and we'll just go from there. A few things we've taken out, at least temporarily, because we're not sure of the loyalty of the people who use them or give them to us. But if we find out that sooner or later that they're straight, we'll put them back up there. But we don't want to be embarrassed by somebody coming out 6 months from now and saying, "I fooled that Metzger. I fooled him. I worked for the FBI all along, and he was too stupid to figure it out." You know, sometimes we think the Christians and the Jews don't work together too much. I never thought that. I always figured they're working belly to belly, man, I'll tell you. But Terre Haute, Indiana, has a newspaper, and I forget the name of it, but anyhow, there was a blurb on the internet about how these they were going to take a bunch of people from Terre Haute, Indiana, and take them up there to Illinois to the Holocaust Museum. So I thought, you know, I'll do my civic duty and put a little bit of truth into it. And let's see here. I did two of them, tried to get it through. I find it interesting that, dear Mr. Editor, I find it interesting that of all the Holocaust articles for the past years, only recent Israeli articles say most of these museums you're talking about are very lightly attended, if at all. except those in bigger cities like Washington, D.C., where everybody, they force the kids in school to get on a school bus and take them down there. Another strange fact, the so-called Nazi leader that created the entire Skokie uproar, which led to the creation of the Skokie Museum, was Frank Cohen, known as Frank Holland, a Jew, a tidbit some people might like to know. Well, right away I got this reply. It was automatic, so they must have some kind of automatic thing to grab anything they don't like. It says the value entered for type your letter cannot be accepted due to the presence of profanity. Please remove any objectionable content and try again. So I thought, well, I'll cut it down a little bit. I'll take that first part out. And so I sent this. In a recent article, it mentioned a field trip to the Skokie Holocaust Museum. One tidbit that might interest your readers. The Nazi leader that created the uproar was Frank Holland, real name Frank Cohen, who happens to be a Jew. And guess what? Comes back at me. The value entered for type your letter, which don't make sense to me, cannot be accepted due to the presence of profanity. Please remove any objectionable content and try again. I wonder whether they mean the use of the word Nazi or the use of the word Jew. It's got to be one of the two. That shows how bad it is. You can't even, no matter how true it is, especially out of history, they won't print it. Just like they tell me my letters many times here in the local paper are in bad taste. Bad taste. I've never quite understood that, you know. Is that like the British when they say that's not cricket? It's sort of a crazy thing to cover everything. That's not in good taste. Well, almost everything that's happening in this country today is not in good taste. And especially this election that's going on, this campaign for president. There's nothing in good taste. Oh, incidentally, announcement. My sign is back up in front of my house. I had to make it smaller, but I still put pretty big letters on a pegboard, you know, about 3 feet by 3 feet, which is within their so-called rules around this Berg, and they can see it fine from the road because it's only about maximum 20 feet from the road. So I've got the sign back up there, and what it says today, it says, wait a minute, what does it say? I forget now. I just put it up last night. Oh, they all suck. And now that's not too hard to understand, I don't think, even for the people around here. So anyhow, the sign's back up. Tommy's back in, and I don't even have my electronic signs up yet because I can't figure out how to program them. That's those LED lights. You can see them from, you know, 3 blocks away, but I haven't figured out how to program them. But pretty soon I'll have more signs than I ever did up here. And if they say I got to move this sign, I'm going to tell them the same thing Sitting Bull the engine told them. I will move no more. Well, here's an email of an article I'll send to you, but it says the headline was, notice how quiet Russia has been over Syria. The Middle East is about to find out no means no. So the comment from one of our friends says, yet part of us is very concerned due to the old adage made famous in the movie Forrest Gump. Stupid is as stupid does. Obama and his bunch, liberal, progressive crybabies, conservatives too, if nothing else, stupid. They may yet get all of us killed by talking tough against a country like Russia, who is not afraid of their bluster. Like it or not, Russia is a superpower. Yeah. Well, here's a little blurb about your friend and mine, Donald Trump. I'm not going to tell you where this comes from, but it's funny. whatever else he may be, the real estate franchise ringmaster, reality show boss, the Maharaja of merchandise, the GOP's front runner for now, Donald Trump, who will take his place on stage tonight for the first of too many debates pitting Republican presidential hopefuls against one another, is also heir to a precious Jewish tradition. He will most likely not be our next commander-in-chief, but he is perhaps our last great vaudevillian. How else could a New York billionaire, not historically the demographic with which most Americans warmly identify, rise to national prominence? From the first, as he emerged from the mists of Queens into Manhattan and national prominence, Trump needed a shtick. It was then that he seemed to have important realization, perhaps the most substantial one of his career. Of all the American industries, he intuited the entertainment industry was the only one truly attuned to the nation's natural rhythms. Political, business, or politics, business, all of the rest were just playing catch-up. To succeed, he needed to ham it up. It was the same realization that men like Benjamin Franklin Keith, often hailed as the father of vaudeville, had a century before. A rapidly industrializing country, Keith understood needed distractions that had as much verve and audacity as its marketplace. He needed to appeal to some scrub of newly comfortable Americans who were now partaking in the hyperventilated making and buying and selling of stuff that was fueling so much quick growth. Rather than the medicine shows and the fairs and the minstrel acts that crisscrossed the country, often remaining regional attractions, Keith began to champion acts that were simultaneously titillating and clean. He understood the same fundamental thing the impresarios of rock and roll would fathom 50 years later, namely that the key to making it in America was giving its middle class just enough thrills. Following this dictum, midgets were dispatched to dance on stage saying, but the words hell and damn were strictly forbidden. Keith also realized on these shores, more was always more. His first theater, Boston's Bijou, was a marvel of gilded excess, the first such establishment in the United States to be lighted by electricity, a temple to opulence, and made sure the show started as soon as you walked through the door. I guess that's Donald, all right. I don't care how honest he is, just as long as he raises hell and causes more dissension and division in this country. So his form of chaos, I am attuned to. Unless you're really thinking any of these assholes are going to change things in this country, except making it worse. Hold on, there's more. Stroll into Fifth Avenue's Trump Tower and you'll get the same golly gee feeling. No matter how many times you've been or how many other splendid buildings you've had the pleasure of visiting, the tower, like all other Trump properties, will overwhelm you. That's because it's not so much a building as an advertisement, a statement of intent, a promise of wonders to come. In true vaudeville fashion, the hype's half the show. Not that the show itself disappoints. You may think that American politics is too much of a circus. Trump's genius lies in realizing it wasn't circus enough. And some people who guzzle down raunchy entertainment aren't going to flip a channel and expect their elected officials to act like Lincoln and Douglas. They're going to want to explore their anxieties and their dreams in a way that is both safe and arousing. It's why we have Breaking Bad. And it's why we have Donald Trump. As racial tensions simmer, his co-tenders offer little but platitudes and empty promises of big tents and happy feelings. Trump, in his outrageous comments about Mexican wetbacks being rapists, which is true, say is tapping into the very source of our discontent. His stupid statements aren't designed to be insightful or even true. They're designed to give a jolt. Well, I think most working class Americans think they're at least half right. I mean, if you know, the prisons are filling up with Mexican wetbacks, and a tremendous amount of them are into pedophilia and all that kind of stuff, and rape and murder. So, which, frankly speaking, we may need the verdant parts of our popular culture that have not been turned arid by the harsh light of political correctness, are governed by slick sophisticates, observational comedians who are great at exploring the mechanics of their own discomforts, but not so great at delivering that all-American tradition of broad comedy through which so many generations found a place in the mainstream. When Irving Berlin, to name but one famous example, wrote "Cohen Owes Me $97, a humorous ditty about a Jewish businessman who, on his deathbed, can say of nothing but his debtors, he was inviting Jews to laugh at themselves and, by mocking the stereotype, dispel it, even though they were serious, and become just a bit more American, or try to be. And by turning prejudice into a punchline, he was also opening the door for the rest of the nation to see these marginal people as somehow acceptable, more mirthful than menacing. In other words, the Jewish clown. Thankfully, immigrants are still knocking on this country's door, not really thankfully, looking for the same old promise of life, liberty, and happiness. I'm proud to be one of them, the guy who wrote this. But the cultural machinery these days isn't interested in common dreams. It's interested in categorizing and preserving differences in the molecules of gender and race and sexual orientation. Of course we are. That's the kind of people we are, because we are white, A.B. Had Cohen Owes Me $97 been released today, he could count on scores of hot takes popping on up on the online, decrying Berlin as a bigot, maybe a racist, and he probably was. New arrivals have always looked at popular culture as a pathway to assimilation. The more we bow to the tyranny of sensitivity, the more likely we are to discover the path is blocked. Yeah, you figured that out. This is why we had vaudeville, and this is why we now have Trump. The Donald's comments may not be so cleansing as the jokes of last century, but they're cut from the same cloth. American politics, he realizes, awaits its vaudeville moment. Sour with so many disappointments, we want someone like the Jewish gestures of a century ago. We'll stumble onto the stage dressed in an oversized persona and say outrageous things that start difficult conversations we don't feel comfortable having because we want to believe that we're too well-heeled and nicely dressed for such base sentiments. Base sentiments as distrust of wetbacks. We're not above any of it, of course, and Trump knows it, and we're grateful to him for being so rude and so committed to the act. Look at him just so. And he's a funny Fanny Bryce with thinner hair, quipping like the original Funny Girl. That's wrong is for the people. Of course, this may not be an act at all, or it may end tonight with a thick curtain of respectability finally coming down over the fun and bravado. It hardly matters. In his short run, Trump has given us a taste of tradition we ourselves have carefully crafted, and reminder that sometimes to have a serious talk, you need a bloated, loudmouthed Jew who's unafraid to offend. I like that. That's pretty good, you know, because, you know, early on, the comedians were largely Jewish in New York and so forth. And they always dressed up like the Marx Brothers and all that kind of stuff. So, but now they're deadly serious. And they've got a country called Israel. And they got atomic bombs, man. You better shape up and listen. Anyhow, go, Trump, go. Just raise hell and split it all up and embarrass them all. I love it. For a while, you're my hero, but not too long. And the Jew Bernie Sanders is trying to play catch-up. He's going to out-nigger the rest of them, but he's too late. He's too late. The Clintons have been out. They've been niggering the niggers for a long time. Bernie, forget it. Al Sharpton, forget that guy. They're not going to go with you. Yeah, they went with Obama. You'd probably do them a lot more good than Obama because Obama didn't do much for them. But I did hear on the news this morning a list of people that they're talking about becoming this Supreme Court justice to take place of Scalia. One was a Vietnamese national, a woman from Vietnam who came here after the Vietnam War. Yeah. And then there's a bunch of blacks, you know, and so forth. So anyhow, looks like we're going to have lots of fun if they get their chance to appoint. One way or another, they're going to put an asshole in there. Nine old men. Used to be when Jefferson said, I think it was Jefferson said, the Supreme Court is nine old men that can decide anything means anything. Incidentally, I was hearing them talk about some of the founding fathers last night on the radio. And it said, you know, Washington and the usual suspects, they were great. And they were all there at Valley Forge, and some of them were even staying in the same cabins. But the one guy said, where's Jefferson? Well, I remember there's a quote when George Washington says, where's Jefferson? Well, he knew where he was at. Jefferson was trying to make a deal to stay with the British, and he was hanging out down in Monticello in his big house screwing that nigger slave of his that everybody went gaga over. And also, here's a guy that's got maybe 100 slaves, and he never freed but one, and that was on his deathbed. They come up with the Declaration of Independence, and all men are created equal, and all that bullshit. Well, I don't believe he wrote that. It's totally out of his character. Here's a guy screaming everybody's equal, but he's got all kinds of slaves. And also, he's talking about the Revolution, and he never fired a shot. No, Jefferson never was on the lines. He never fought a shot. But yet, people today go by his words of all men are created equal. Bullshit. I see Bernie Sanders is bragging about his time living on a kibbutz in Israel. Well, he hasn't put out much of the latest information on kibbutz. They're a total failure in Israel. People are leaving the kibbutzes like mad. And here's the way the kibbutz run. I read a story about a gal that her parents sent her a color TV into the kibbutz. And they made her get rid of it because it was so communist that if one person received something, everybody else had to get the same thing in the whole kibbutz. That might be 100 people. So she got a color TV. Unless they gave everybody a color TV, she couldn't have a color TV, so she had to go to a black and white TV. This is how insane a lot of that kibbutz stuff, and that's why the kibbutz is a communist-type thing and a poor communist thing, and they're crumbling. They're going away. The Jew capitalists don't want that stuff around. Maybe that's what Bernie will get going over here, man. Maybe Bernie's going to get that going over here. A lot of things he says I agree with, don't get me wrong, about the big billionaire bankers and all that stuff, and cutting the war budget and all that stuff, and souping up the environmental programs and so forth, and getting off the oil and natural gas and getting onto other forms of energy. Those things I agree with him, but a lot of things I don't, too. And I got to keep one eye open when I'm dealing with a Jew. In fact, I got to keep one eye open when I deal with a Christian, too. In fact, I got to keep both eyes open when I deal with a Christian. The difference is a Jew, once he fails at conning you one time, usually goes on to somebody else and forgets you. But a Christian will come back again and again and again trying to con you. That's the difference. Don't get me wrong. Honest, forthright socialism is good, as we learn by studying early national socialism, not national capitalism like it turned into. But this is about Eugene Debs, and Eugene Debs was a pretty good guy. He was wrong on the race issue because of the unions. He was all for integrating the unions, while the Jew Samuel Gompers was totally against it, which is interesting. So let's listen to this about Debs.
Year after year, in thousands of meetings with workers, Debs repeated his message from one end of the country to the other.
In 1908, in New York City, Debs spoke before 10,000 people, and the New York Times called it the greatest political meeting ever held in that city. In San Diego, California, 15,000 workers paid their way to a Socialist Party meeting to hear him speak. And in Cincinnati, Ohio, more people came to hear Debs than to hear William Howard Taft, the Republican candidate who was soon to become president.
Over and over again, Debs raised the same basic issues as he denounced the capitalist economic system and fought for the socialist revolution.
Why should working people support the Socialist Party? Because it is the only party unequivocally committed to their economic interests, to the abolition of the wage system and the freedom of the worker from exploitation and every other species of servitude. Let no one charge that socialists have arrayed class against class in this struggle. That has been done long since in the evolution of capitalist society. One class now owns the tools while another class uses them. One class is small and rich, and the other large and poor. One wants more profit, and the other more wages. One consists of capitalists, and the other of workers. There can be no peace and goodwill between these essentially antagonistic economic classes, nor can the class conflict be covered up or smoothed over.
Oh, I think that was Bernie there. But anyhow, they can condemn socialism all they want, but it was the answer to capitalism, runaway capitalism, and it was the answer to fascism and so forth. But it's like any other struggle, you got to make sure you got the right people running it. Most systems will work if honest people run them, but the trouble is almost all systems become corrupt because dishonest people get in power and run them.
Truth Unveiled here, and today I'm sharing with you the real truth about the Zika virus and where it actually comes from, because no, it does not come from a mosquito. And I'm going to show you where it actually does come from and the proof to go with it. So I'm here at globalresearch.ca, and it tells us that the World Health Organization, WHO, declared the Zika virus a so-called global health emergency on Monday, February 1st, just 2 days ago, without providing much detail on the disease, if any at all. So here are some facts until we receive more info. The sexually transmitted virus has been around for 69 years, so since 1947, and is a product of two companies, the LGC Group, which is headquartered in the UK, and the ATCC, it should say a C here, which is headquartered in the US. Now, the LGC Group is the UK's designated National Measurement Institute for Chemical and Bioanalytical Measurements, and an international leader in the laboratory services, measurement standards, reference materials, genomics, and proficiency testing market. Place. And you can find that website right here, actually, and I'll even link for it below, of course. And then going back, it talks about one of its branches, the LGC standards, and then it goes on to the ATCC, which is headquartered in here in the US, which is the premier global biological materials resource and standards organization, whose mission focuses on the acquisition, authentication, production, preservation, development, and distribution of standard reference microorganisms, cell lines, and other materials. While maintaining traditional collection materials, ATCC develops high quality product standards and services to support scientific research and breakthroughs that improve the health of global populations. Well, that's funny because they're behind the Zika virus, and here's their website right here. So going back to this article, well, who is funding these two organizations? Because the partnership, this is what they do. Who owns the patent to the virus? The Rockefeller Foundation. The Rockefeller Foundation is funding, owns, and patents the Zika virus. There's even proof for it right here. But what's more disturbing is these words of David Rockefeller in an address to the Trilateral Commission meeting in June 1991. He says, and I quote, "We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. Got to keep it a secret. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subjected to the lights of publicity during those years. What plan? The plan for New World Order. But the world is more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government. The supernatural sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national auto-determination practiced in past centuries." As you can see, this is real disturbing. Not only that, it gets worse. You can actually buy the Zika virus and keep it in your home for only a small fee. And I'll show you the actual resource and link right now. Now, here I am at the ATCC website, which is, of course, in partnership with LGC Standards. As you can see, it shows you the Zika virus or ATCC VR84, huh, like Rex84, but it shows you the permits and restrictions, the classification, agent strain, and biosafety level. However, it also shows you the price of 599 euros, freeze-dried, ready to go. However, when you look at the history behind this, this is what you see. Name of depositor, Jay Cassells, the Rockefeller Foundation. And the source comes from blood from experimental forest sentinel rhesus monkey in Uganda, 1947. So this proves right here that the Zika virus comes from the Rockefeller Foundation, that the Rockefellers are the one who's not only funded this disease, but they also own the disease and they patent it, and you can get it for a small fee. You can actually buy this disease or this virus for only 599 euros. And they can even let you add it to the cart. So this just goes to show you folks that the New World Order, the One World Government is here. The same people who are funding these world wars are the same people who are funding these pandemics and growing them in laboratories. It comes from no such things as a mosquito. It comes from the Rockefeller Foundation. So I just thought I'd share this all with you. I wanted to make this a quick little update. Please, please, please be aware where all this is coming from and always seek the truth for yourself. Who is Yahuwah? Truth Unveiled. Shalom.
Well, I don't know where that shalom came from. I don't know whether this is true or not, but I think it's interesting to listen to and keep an eye open. There's no doubt that there's a desire to limit the population of the earth, and personally I think that's a good idea, but how they're going to do it, maybe they're going to limit the white population of the earth first. Yeah, so let me know if you hear any more about this. You know, they talk about this so-called richest man in the world, Carlos Slim, down in Mexico, and they talk about him all the time, but what they don't talk about is when the Pope's down there talking about the rich in Mexico, he should be on the steps of the Federal Reserve in New York City, because U.S. corporations and banks have controlled Mexico for 100 years or better. Also, the fruit companies, you know, that General, what's his name, talked against. Smedley Butler was talking about that, and about all the occupation and warfare that went on to keep the workers in line in Central South America and Mexico. I don't think you'll see the Pope anytime soon getting up there in New York City and giving a speech about that, and about the Vanderbilts and all those people that owned all the railroads and everything in Mexico, and about the NACFA, that's pauperizing Mexican workers.
Pope Francis launches launches a broadside against government corruption.
On his first full day in Mexico, Pope Francis launches a broadside against government corruption. Less than 24 hours after arriving in the country, the head of the Catholic Church met with Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto and delivered a message.
Each time we seek the path of privilege or benefit for the few, society becomes fertile ground for corruption, the drug trade, the exclusion of different cultures, the violence, and also human trafficking, kidnapping, and killing.
Peña Nieto, his wife, and finance minister have all been embroiled in conflict of interest scandals involving homes purchased from government contractors. But the Mexican president spoke of the Pope's vision.
We see in you a sensitive and visionary leader. We know you as the reformer pope that is taking the Catholic Church to the people.
Thousands converged on Mexico City's historic center to hear the pontiff. Some waited for hours in hopes that Francis can help heal some of the country's wounds.
And Clara kept her Bible right next to the phone in case she needed a quote while she talked to someone. In the memory she smiles while the blessing is said. And visions of freeze tag dance in my head. She says I'll grow up big if I eat all my roast. I still believe in heaven, but I won't believe in ghosts anymore. I put away childish things. I put away childish things. Every other weekend, age of 13, with my fishing pole on the field and stream. Riding back home on the Trailways bus, I looked out the window till I saw too much. And I called my parents by their own first names. I played in the alley, but I didn't play the game anymore. I put away childish things. I put away childish things. Keep it all alive. locked up tight and wait till daylight comes. If I wait till daylight comes,
you got to put away childish things when you read the news. I'm telling you, all this bullshit with the Pope running around and oh, shit. It's almost more than a guy can stand anymore, you know. You unlock the treasures of the Rome that they've stolen off the people for hundreds of years. Wow. Don't look for corruption to disappear in Mexico anytime soon. No, that corruption is going to be around a long time until somebody cuts their throat. Well, here's something that's a little bit interesting, boys and girls. Let's see here. As Singapore marks the Total Defense Day today, it's worth reflecting on the vital role of civilians in the war against terror. Violent extremism is not deterred by military force, however powerful or capable. Countries armed with nuclear weapons like Britain, France, and the United States have all failed to deter terror attacks or unconventional warfare attacks. Amid the bloodshed, Singaporeans enjoy a fragile peace. Will the Republic be forever immune to such attacks? The hard truth is no. Singapore's multi-agency counter-terrorism effort is round the clock, 24/365. But it is near impossible for security agencies to prevent individuals, the so-called lone wolves, from killing in the name of violent extremism, when everyday objects from cars to kitchen knives can be used as weapons of choice. Today, such extremists are also willing to die while committing mass murder and thus cannot be deterred. Well, isn't that the same way when bombers fly over countries and drop tons of bombs on people? Aren't those pilots and so forth willing to give their lives for the military-industrial complex? I lost my place here. Still, continued vigilance is never futile, as the success of such attacks is not inevitable. Accurate, relevant, and timely intelligence, robust security checks, and alert, disciplined, fast responders can frustrate attempts to wreak havoc, and vice versa. Should the worst happen, it's almost certain that unconventional groups will rush to claim bragging rights as authors of the first successful attack on Singapore. An attack here will have propaganda value far in excess of the size and complexity of the operation or actual body count. Singapore is a prized target, as it is one of the last world cities to have successfully kept the scourge of unconventional warfare at bay. Back in the 60s, in the days of confrontation, Singaporeans endured a brutal campaign of urban bombings when Indonesia waged an undeclared war against the Malaysian Federation. 7 Singapore residents died and more than 50 were injured in 42 bomb attacks that targeted people indiscriminately and without warning between 63 and 65. Even during the most intense phase of the urban bombing campaign in March 65, with 7 bomb attacks and 3 deaths that month, Singaporeans stayed united. After confrontation, Singaporeans enjoyed years of peace until March 1985, when a bomb was set off in the heart of the Orchard Road at Faber House, presumably aimed at the Embassy of Israel, which was then located in the building. Faber House was bombed again in December 86. There were small-scale bombings of the AIA building and the Shell Tower from November to December 1987, three attacks within 2 months. Since then, Singapore has kept unconventional warfare bombers at bay. Today, if the Republic suffers an attack of violent extremism, younger Singaporeans accustomed to years of stability, growth, and prosperity must demonstrate the same tenacity and courage that the founding generation displayed during the confrontation. In other words, support the system. This year, activities marking Total Defense Day, on the day British forces in Singapore surrendered to the Japanese on February 15, 1942, represent a timely juncture for all here to remember that today's peace tests the shoulders of leaders and citizens who have demonstrated a steadfast will and ability to defend this island. Nobody else is responsible for the nation's defense. Well, anyhow, that's a long article, but anyhow, they're concerned about lone wolves. Lone wolves are succeeding all over the world. They are. They're, and what good are the atomic bombs? What good are the atomic bombs to Israel?
My mother was already dead, as it happens. All through the war, I wrote letters home to a dead woman. What do you tell people about what you did to us?
We do not talk about it. No one will talk about it.
Nor do we. You know why? Because no one would believe it. No one would believe what you did to us. He treated us like animals because we surrendered. He said you'd rather die than live without honor. But he didn't die.
It was a lie, they told us. It was all lies. We did to you. You held on. You showed me that nothing's worth more than this life.
Finley. He was my friend. He was a prisoner here. He put your life in my hands. He wanted an end to this.
Maybe that is why I am alive. For this day. Maybe we both lived for this day. You can make an end. You are a soldier, Lomax. You never surrendered.
I'm still at war.
You know, I watched a series last couple of nights called The Water Wars. It's about the struggle of Germany trying to get enough heavy water to build an atomic bomb, and a tremendous amount of people who died because of that, trying to get that heavy water for the bomb. And you know, building the American bombs cost a lot of lives too. But they were frantically trying to get that, not the Germans, but the Americans were trying frantically to get that bomb ready because they wanted to bomb Germany. And the Jews and next to Roosevelt were clamoring. They wanted to make Germany flattened into a pastoral agricultural area, totally, the whole country. But on the other hand, the Germans, if they had gotten that atomic bomb, probably their first target would have been London. It would have been closer to get it there than any place else. So it's a good thing that they didn't get it, and too bad that the United States got it too. One question always bothered me is sarin gas is so terribly volatile and toxic and such a killing gas. If Hitler was so bad, why didn't he drop it on the Soviet armies coming in from the east? That's always bothered me. I know people say, like, from the First World War, they had to watch the gas because sometimes the wind would change and blow it back on their own troops. But faced with an absolute collapse and destruction of Germany, why wouldn't Hitler, if he was such a terrible guy, have dropped massive amounts of sarin gas on the advancing Red Armies, which he did not do, which is interesting. Another thing, in all these kind of Hollywood movies and so forth, they'll play clips of Hitler screaming and yelling in German. They never play his actual audible speech in English. Now, I'd like to know, there's got to be somebody around that has turned those speeches of Hitler into English. And if anybody out there knows where he can get them, I'd like to get them. I would like to hear it straight from Hitler instead of in German, which, unfortunately, I was lazy and didn't learn. So, but it would be amazing if nobody has ever done it. Because we know that they don't want the general public to hear what Hitler actually said. So, if you see any place where that's available, let me know. It should be on YouTube by now. Anyhow, you watch this, The Water Wars, and you'll see how the corruption and the chaos and the murder and everything is on all sides in these wars. That's why you don't, white people going to war with other white people, or Europeans and Americans and so forth going to war against each other, and the Anglo-Saxons against the Slav. It's all insanity. It's all total insanity. Like I said, Obama just announced they want to build more sophisticated atomic weapons. They've got tremendous numbers of atomic weapons now. And there is the insanity of that little bandit state of Israel with, we don't know how many atomic bombs they've got. That's a country so small they can't even turn a fighter plane around in it without flying over the Mediterranean. All this is total. Do you ever stop and think how insane all this shit is? I mean, think about it. Incidentally, that clip I played, that audio clip earlier, that was from a film called The Railway Man, I guess. I've never seen it. Well, we'll end up the show here with a email from our friend Stray Dog back there in New Germany. All called New Jersey, but it don't look much like Germany to me. He was wrong about the governor going to be make it to be president. That's not going to happen. Anyhow, he says, I had a horrible experience recently I'd like to get off my chest. I went to the doctor for a checkup, and I was the only white person in a large room that held around 25 niggers. I chose not to sit down as the seats were fabric with tight corners, perfect places for bed bugs to hide. Standing at ease after several moments, the smell hit me, one of the unwashed simian in various stages of being in full sweat in the near 80-degree waiting room. The doctor was running late, and so was my patients. After waiting nearly an hour, I walked out of that place. However, it did bring back memories of when I was 5 years old and my mommy took me to the Philadelphia Zoo. We visited the monkey cage exhibit. The smell is exactly the same. A keen sense of smell is a trademark of the lone wolf. However, in this case, it really hurt me. Thanks. Stray Dog, New Germany. Okay, thanks for their opinion there. Thankfully, it hasn't got like that around here. It's still pretty civilized. Well, that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Tears Day. And just remember, and I keep seeing these things on TV and radio about how many people have been conned into pleading guilty for crimes. I saw one the other day where there was hundreds of people that voluntarily give in and commit to being illegal. It's amazing when all they have to do is say, I have nothing to say, and stick with it. If there's anybody out there you know that's in trouble like that or may get in trouble, get that into their brain. I have nothing to say no matter what. I think I would even be screaming that if they were pulling my fingernails out. But still, hundreds, maybe thousands of people go to jail every year because they're too stupid and too cowardly, mainly, to use the five words.
Take this job and shove. I ain't working here no more. Woman done left, took all the reason I was working for. Better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out that door. You can take this job and shove. I ain't working here no more. Well, I've been working in this factory for now 15 years. All this time I watched my woman drowning in a pool of tears. I've seen a lot of good folks die and a lot of bills to pay. I'd get a shirt right off my back if I had the guts to say, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. Woman done left, took all the reason I was working for. Better not try to stand in my way, cause I'm walking out the door. You can take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. The foreman, he's a regular dog. The line boss, he's a fool. He got a flat top haircut. Lord, boy, thinks he's cool. One of these days I'm gonna blow my tongue. That sucker, he's gonna play. I can't wait until I get the nerve to walk up to him and say, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. Woman done left, took the reason that I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way, but I'm walking out the door.
job and shove.